because I don't have the staple function on my printer. So in Yeshiva, I'm not allowed to keep anything on one page because the machine staples for me. But in the summertime, I got to keep everything on one page. I don't have staples. So, okay. So you guys have not yet started the Derabbanans. You guys are in the middle of the Doraisas. On my way over, I listened to the most recent shiur. You guys had Bishul Achar Afia, right? So it's a great shiur, just for the record. And hopefully you understood it. It wasn't so plush to understand. But so you should definitely go over it. And you should definitely take the time to go through the Makoros properly. But this is moving over to, actually, Shalom Aleichem Rebbe, how are you? This is moving over to what may be the more complicated section that you guys are going to learn probably starting next a week from, you know, basically you're going to probably do one more week on the Doraisas and probably move it to the Derabbanans. The Derabbanans are actually very, very complicated, and what I would urge everybody, when you start learning, you move from Simen Shin Yud Ches to Simen Reish Nun Gimel. Don't. One thing I'll urge you is don't get discouraged. It's one of those things that, I once read this in Sports Illustrated, I think, that there was a fellow, I forgot even which athlete was being interviewed, but he said that he was talking about the way a diamond cutter cuts diamonds. He said they put it on a, anybody ever seen such a thing? So they put it on a stand. They have like a little stand that the diamond goes on, like a stender, a mini stender for a diamond. They put it there. And the guy takes a hammer and he bangs away at it with the hammer. And he said, if you would have picked up the diamond after 99 hits of the hammer, you wouldn't see a scratch on it. And he said, when that 100th hit goes, it cuts clean through. So the guy, and he said, the diamond cutter told me, he said, don't think that just because nothing happened after the first 99 hits, that I was wasting my time. He says, no, the first 99 hits were necessary for the 100th hit that made it clean through. So it's important to keep that in mind, especially when you're learning certain things like the Derabbanans of Shehiya Chazara. So the first number of things you're going to study may like just seem it's not going in at all. And then if you keep working at it, it'll cut clean through. And it's a tremendously good feeling when it does. So keep that in mind. So I'll just give you a very brief introduction. You guys are discussing if you cook something on Shabbos in a certain way, what is the halacha min ha-Torah? There are many dinim derabbanan that surround this din d'oraisa, which basically are a safeguard. Not a safeguard for cooking, ironically, but a safeguard for what? You have to talk loud because I'm old. What? Right, Mavir, right? It's a safeguard for carrying in Rosh Hashanah, right? No, I'm kidding. That's one of those malachas that has two names. So what's the, you could have Havara and Havara, right? So or you could have Ma'avir or Mavir. So which one are we talking about? Lighting a fire on Shabbos. So the chashash that the Gemara goes through is, and we'll see it in source number one, Yud Ches Amid Beis in Perakira. So he says, "Vahashta de Amar Mar." And now that the master has said, what is the reason for the Isser of Shehiyah? Now I haven't told you what that is yet, but what is the reason for it? Gzeira Shema Yechate Begecholim. It's a gzeira lest you come to stoke the coals. Now what on earth are we talking about over here? So in those days, you guys ever see what a Talmudic oven or a Talmudic stovetop looks like? So it was. It happens to be the first time in around Beit Meir. There's a Hilchos Shabbos place. I don't know if it still exists, but when I was in NCSY Kolo, the first year, my fourth year in NCSY Kolo, they moved from Efrat to Beit Meir. So they have a. So they took us on a little tour of the Hilchos Shabbos place over there, where they sort of demonstrate all the malachos. And it was the first time I had learned the sugyas before, what I thought fairly well, and I. They showed what a kira is and what a tanur is, and it was just a moment for me. I was just sort of like, I don't remember what I thought before, but now that I saw it, I was just like, oh, like so many things made sense that hadn't made sense before, and I was like, now show me grufa, okay, and now show me ketuma, okay, and it just made a lot of sense. Things that just I thought I knew what they were, and then when you see them in real life, and as I was leaving, feeling really like, wow, I never understood anything before, I must be really dumb, I looked to my right, and Rav Meir Tversky was standing there staring at it. So I was like, okay, maybe I wasn't so bad. So you have to sort of know what it is in real life to understand it, but for our purposes, a kira is a box. It's a box, it's a square, let's say, or a cube, and inside the cube there's a little archway entrance. So what goes in the archway entrance? The fuel. So you take, nowadays we would put charcoal in there. Right? Nowadays we would take charcoal and we would put it in there and then we'd light it up. And that would create a tremendous amount of heat that builds up in the box. And then on the top of the box you cut out a circle, and that circle is the stovetop where you put the pot. That's what a kira is. A tanur is more like a volcano, a mini volcano. It's a cone-shaped, mountain, for lack of a better, mini mountain, obviously. And you put the fuel in that same cave door opening. I know when I do this with my hands, it's super helpful, I'm sure. But the point is that it's basically, let's work with the concept of a kira is a big box, and it has a little cutout on the top where the heat comes through, and you put the pot on it, and that causes whatever's in the pot to boil up and to cook. So what we're afraid of is, nowadays, you guys been in a campfire? I don't know, you're in a camp, so any fire technically is a campfire, but more like the actual campfire. So that was funny. I was like, as I'm saying, I'm like, that's so lame. But so you're... It was a longer ride than I thought, I guess. Okay, so so when you're at the campfire and the fire is starting to go out, what do? You're right. You poke it. That's when the guy who there's one guy who's like tells everybody else to stand back. I got this. Like, I grew up in a cave and I know how to work campfires and whatever. So there's that one guy and he's fanning it and he's poking it and he's doing all these things to try to turn everything over. So if you do that on Shabbos and you fan those flames or you blow with your mouth or you poke it with a stick and it causes it to flare up a little bit, you have violated the Isser Doraisa of lighting a fire on Shabbos. Just to add to the fire is the violation. Now, nowadays, how would that translate? Nowadays, if you had a pot on the stove and you keep it on the lowest flame, so sometimes nothing really happens, even if you're just making an omelet and you have a really low flame, so you're sitting there and you... It's not going. It's not, the eggs are still they're still liquidy, and you want it to get moving already. So you turn the knob and you raise the fire. So that is the fear of leaving something on a stovetop on Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, is that things are not going to be getting ready fast enough. Now let me ask you something. You take something completely raw, right? You crack an egg right before Shabbos, and then you leave it on the stovetop, let's say you're about to light Shabbos candles, and you crack an egg, you open it up, you put it in the frying pan, you leave it on the flame, then you run and light Shabbos candles, then you come back, and the egg cooks. What did you violate? Bishul? Shehiyah, right. Very clear. You did not violate a malacha of Bishul on Shabbos. Baharaya. What's the best raya for that? What did you do in the interim? You went and lit candles, right? Right before Shabbos, you lit the candles. Does that mean you violated the Isser of lighting a fire on Shabbos? No, you lit the candles before Shabbos, and the malacha continues into Shabbos. This is a big machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel at the beginning of the Masechta. Beis Shammai says you're not even allowed to start a malacha that's going to continue into Shabbos, and Beis Hillel says you are. And then the Gemara says, so where does the whole Isser of Shehiyah come from? Why is it that we say you're not allowed to take an egg, crack it open, put it on the fire, and then go light Shabbos candles? Because Shema Yechate Begecholim. It's a din derabbanan. There is no bishul going on here. Simin Reish Nun Gimel, which is all of these laws, nidderabbanan, assumes you have already taken care of everything in Simin Shin Yud Ches. You guys are experts in the Doraisas of Bishul, And now there is this Darabanan problem, but essentially the main Darabanan fear is that you will come to raise the flame, stoke the coals, fan the flames, however you want to say it. Shema yichate begechol. That's what we're talking about over here. Okay, and that's the theme that goes on when it comes to shihiyah. So again, just to define our terms, shihiyah means taking something and leaving it on a fire from the beginning of Shabbos. Right? Then there's something called hachzara. Right? What's hachzara? Right? Taking it off the fire and putting it back on the fire on Shabbos. Now, was this item fully cooked already? It was. You are not violating the issur of bishul. Bishul is taken care of. However, there's an issur derabbanan of shihiyah and hachzara. Leaving it on a fire from before Shabbos, or putting it back on a fire when it was already on the fire on the onset of Shabbos. Those are the two isurim that are found, and there's something, it's a third category unofficially called Mesina Lechatchila. That's Shabbos day. You take it out of the refrigerator and you put it on the fire. But it's really just another form of Hafzara. So it doesn't get its own official title, but we gave it a title nowadays. So that's what we're working on today. Now, that is a very brief introduction. Now I want to discuss one leniency that exists in the Isser of Shihiyah. So in my house growing up, my family, we're not timely people. We don't, it's not, as my wife explained to me later in my life, she said, it's not that you don't like to come on time to things, it's that you don't have any concept of time. She explained, this is a thing with the Balsams, we don't understand time. If we were Hasidish, we would say that we're Lamala min Azman, but we're probably Lamata min Azman, actually. But the point is that we don't understand. Like, I will call my wife wherever I am, and I'll say, I'll be home in 10 minutes. She'll say, where are you? I said, I'll be home in 10 minutes. She's like, where are you? I'll tell her where I am. She's like, you'll be home in 15 minutes. I'm like, no, come on, what are you talking about? 15 minutes later, I pull in, right? I just don't know how long things take. So that's the idea of not understanding how long things are. So shihiyah can be a problem for such people, because in order for you to leave something on a fire before Shabbos, it has to be fully cooked. Or you'll see there, machlokes tanoim, amoraim, rishonim, achronim, arayom hazeh, maybe half cooked is good enough, but it has to be fully cooked from before Shabbos. So I came up with a really good solution. I said, let's put the chulent up right before Shabbos. Meaning I tell my mom, have everything ready to go in the crock pot, and right before Shabbos starts, part of your routine will be plug in the crock pot, then go light the, some people do the fridge light or something like that. I don't know, you have a checklist in your house? If you don't, you should. It's good to have a checklist of all the things. I mean, so one of the things you do is you make sure the refrigerator light is off, you make sure whatever hot water is turned off, I don't know, and you make sure all the lights on are on, the lights you want off are off, and then you plug in the crock pot, and then you go light Shabbos candles. Why does that help? Why does that make things better? Shouldn't that make things worse? In fact, my mom called me up screaming at me one time, and this is already after I'd moved out of the house, and she's like, you made me a disgrace in my friend's... my friends are making fun of me now. I said, why? So it comes into the kitchen. We had guests Friday night. They come into the kitchen. They're like, why do you have a raw chulent cooking? You're cooking on Shabbos. So she's like, no, my son told me to do it this way. So friend's like, you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. I'm pretty sure it's a thing. So I told her, Ma, don't worry. It's okay. So then she was so nervous, she went and asked the Rav of her shul, who is a significant Talmud Chacham. I don't understand how this happened. Maybe the question wasn't asked right. And he said, of course you're not allowed to do that. So to which I said, I don't know what happened over there, but you are allowed to do it. So this is the topic that we're going to be discussing, is plugging the crock pot in 1 minute before Shabbos starts. Is that something that is a good idea, a bad idea, mutter, usser? I'll tell you in advance, it's mutter. Nevertheless, it's a very interesting and fairly self-contained sugya worth discussing. So we already started the Gemara, and we said, now that we know the reason that you're not supposed to put food on a fire right before Shabbos is maybe Shema Yechate, you're going to fan the flames. So the Gemara continues, Hai Kedera Chaisa, that pot that is raw, meaning a pot full of raw food, perhaps a chillin pot, if you will, filled with meat, beans, barley, etc., that is all raw. Shari la'anucha erev Shabbos im chashecha b'tanura. It is mutter to leave it on erev Shabbos as it gets dark in an oven. My taima, what's the reason? Kevan de lo chazi l'urta asuche masiach daita minei. A person, since it will not be fit for the night, a person will surely take his mind off of it. Velo asi l'chatuye gecholim, and he will not come to stoke the flames or the coals. So that is the statement of Kedei Rechaisa. It's not a very long statement. I gave you more Gemara to look at, but we'll look at a little bit more Gemara in a second. But basically, the Gemara makes a fairly straightforward statement. Since the whole reason is Shemi Echate, we're afraid you're going to stoke the flames. So if the pot is full of raw food, so not only is it's mutter to put it on the fire right before Shabbos. Why? Because it's not going to be fit for that night. A person will take his mind off of it, and he will not come to stoke the flames. That's point number one in the Gemara. Then the Gemara says further, Ubashil shapir dami. And if the food is completely cooked, that's also fine. Why would you want to fan the flames to make something that's already cooked more cooked? It's just going to dry it out, perhaps. Bashil velo bashil aser. But if it is somewhat cooked but not fully cooked, that is forbidden. The ishada be garmachaya shapir dami. But, so let's say you have that situation. The cholent is now one-fifth cooked. So now, what are you going to do? You're a little bit stuck. So now, you want to throw in gar machaya. What does gar machaya mean? I can't hear anybody. Raw meat, right? A raw bone, literally. Right? Dein garma dasira beer. Who always said that? Right? Dein garma dasira. All right, that's homework. Who used to say dein garma basira beer? Okay, so he used to say it at Shiva houses. Good, good, very good. So this is the bone of my 10th son, right? Gar machai, you take a raw bone, obviously with meat on it, I assume, and you can throw it in there, and that works as well. Yeah? No, it's not an issue of bittul. It's saying right before Shabbos, you want to throw a bone in there that's going to be raw. So when you look at that chulent, you're going to see, you know, somewhat cooked food and a completely raw piece of meat in there. So you're going to look at the raw piece of meat and say, what's the point of trying to get it going faster? It's not going to be ready till tomorrow anyway.
Don't forget about all the cooked stuff in
there. Right. It's, you're not going to take the pot out and just work around the raw bone. You're going to assume this is part of the dish, and therefore the dish is not ready. So that is also acceptable. Yeah?
Why is there no shot if the fire's going to like die down a little bit and then you'll end up stoking it if it's really raw? Like, you're going to want it to be the highest cooking level possible.
So the assumption that the Gemara, I think, is working with is that there's overnight foods, meaning the chulent in general takes hours and hours to cook. So there are certain overnight foods that, by definition, you put in the right amount of fuel to get it going for hours, and then it's going to sit on that slow simmering heat for the whole night, and the next morning it's going to be good to go. So that was the metzias that they were working with over there. So therefore, the way that they formulated the din was that if the chilent is raw, you're going to be mesiach das from it, and that's acceptable. Okay. So now let's look at the Gemara's statement itself. And if we know pshat in those words, we basically have the whole topic properly. Okay, so we have, let's just break it down really slowly. So we said that Shari, hai kedei rechaisa, Shari la'anucha erev Shabbos im chashecha. Right, so if you have a raw pot full of pot. Well, the pot is not cooked in general, but if you have the food inside the pot that is raw, you're allowed to leave it erev Shabbos im chashecha bitanura. Why? Kaven de lo chazi lo urta. So that's, let's call that statement number one. Lo chazi lo urta. Statement number two. Asuche mesech daita mine. Right? You're going to take your mind off of it. That's statement number two. Velo asi lechatuye gecholim. And that's statement number three. So there are three parts to this statement. Or you could argue it's only a two-part statement, or you could argue it's only a one-part statement. What do I mean by that? Or you don't have to care what I mean by it, but what do you think the Gemara means? Right? Yeah.
It's only one chashash. How is that? Avoid that chashash.
Right. So how are we? What is getting rid of the chashash? How are we getting rid of the chashash?
Since you put something wrong, therefore, because it's not fuzzy to be it now, so then you're going to take your mind off. Now, while you have to come to the polls, you're not even thinking about it.
So you're saying it's really one big statement. You put something wrong in it, that causes you to be misiyach das, and therefore you won't be mechata. Good. Anybody else? He's 100% right? He might be 100% right. They're definitely posting to say he's 100% right. Yeah.
Is it either or? I mean, I could do this, I could do it for a shot, or just that, either one of those three steps will allow you to not fall into the problem.
Right. So maybe you can solve any one of the three. You could do something to make yourself be Mesiach Das from it, even though it would cook. Right? The obvious case is Kedera Chaisa, because it's Metzias is it's not going to cook, but in Achinami, maybe something that would cook by the evening, but you were Mesiach Das from it anyway, you did something to be Mesiach Das from it. And therefore, that's really the continuation of the Gemara that we don't have time to get into right now, but just even within this statement, you can read it that way. You're doing something to be Mesiach Das from it, and therefore, you don't think about it until tomorrow. So why would you fan the flames to make it cook faster when you know it's fine until tomorrow? Yeah?
I think the only one we can potentially ignore is the first part of that it won't be ready to cook, because like, that one, fine. Right? You throw that out, then you can still say, okay, I'm Mesiach Das, but I won't be Mechad to call. You definitely can't throw out the Mechatik Chal part, because that's the problem.
Right.
And if you're not Mesiach Das, who cares if it won't cook until then, if you're always thinking about it? I mean, it seems that the only one that you can really throw out is the fact that it won't cook until tomorrow.
Right. Okay, so that's very important. Right? So he's saying that the one that's easiest to play with is maybe it will be ready by tomorrow, maybe it won't be ready by tomorrow. Maybe it's enough that you just are Mesiach Das. Right, so the chitui problem, you can't really. That's the whole crux of the reason why there's a gzera in the first place. But maybe there's a way to be Mesiach Das without having it be completely raw until tomorrow. What would be such a way? In other words, I put up not a cholent. Right, I keep using the cholent example because it's something we'll talk about at the end. But I put up my case, the original case I started with. I put a raw egg in the frying pan. Then I run and light candles. Then I come back. How long is that egg going to take to cook? Low flame. How long is it going to take to cook? Right, very short time, 10 minutes. It'll definitely be ready to eat on Shabbos, Friday night, no question. So there's a major chashash shemiyachate, because the fact that it was completely raw before Shabbos doesn't seem to help. It's definitely going to be ready for Friday night dinner. So there's an excellent chance that I'm going to want to raise the flame and make it ready even quicker, because I have a lot of preparations to do. So I want to make sure that everything's done. So on one hand, I fulfilled the letter of the law of Kedei Rechaisa. It was a completely raw egg. On the other hand, the spirit of the law, forget about it. Right, the Hesach Hadas? No way. There's no Hesach Hadas. You know what I'm talking? You understand what I'm saying? Right, it's almost a mushel to. You guys probably learned. You learned cliche ni einam avashel, right? Except for all the things that it does, right? So that's also the the letter of the law is cliche and mavashal. And then the spirit of, not exactly, but then they have all these kale habishal. Maybe these things will cook very easily. Oh, I thought of something very interesting on the way in. I don't know. This is a good also, you can, I don't know if you learned the sugya yet, but you guys doing the Gemaras or are you just doing the, right? So if you saw the Gemaras for Bishul, so I had a great thing, I could discuss it amongst yourselves, whether or not it's mutter to do this on Shabbos. So I parked the car in the parking lot. Right next to me, there was a car sitting there with a challah in the windshield. With a challah in the windshield. So I wasn't sure if the dough was dough was raw or not. Wasn't sure if the dough was raw or not. So let's say you had that situation, assuming it was not on the inside of a car. So you guys could do this for homework. But discuss: would it be mutter to do that on Shabbos? Could you take a raw dough, put it out in the sun like that in a place that you know is going to get very hot, and bake challah on Shabbos? Would that be permissible or not? So seemingly not, because there is a malacha called ofet. So it would seem to be that would definitely be a problem, but perhaps there is what to discuss. Okay, anyway, that was a cute thing that I saw on my way inside. I forgot to tell you about it till now. But back to the show. So we're talking about cases where there's hesach hadas and there's no hesach hadas, where the meat is raw. So in the end of the day, which things are we looking for? Yeah.
Can you make some sort of like hakira or like...
That was when I wanted to divide. What I was saying to divide them up into three statements. So how do we solve the Shemi Yechata problem? The same way we would solve it for all the cases, which is what we call Goruf or Kutum. Okay. So for our purposes, we will not define those terms, but we will just explain that means to somehow fix up the flame, to cover it with a blech, perhaps, to cover it with a plata, whatever way you have. To somehow create a situation where the flame is not a problem, right? So that's how you solve the Shemi Yechata problem. So once you have, I'm going to say blech. You guys will probably learn the Chazon Ish Shita that doesn't like blech so much, but I'm just going to say blech, assuming that's a universal accepted thing, even though you know you could discuss amongst yourselves whether it is, okay? So you put up a blech, and that solves the Shemi Yechata problem independent of everything else. So now I have my raw egg that's going to cook up in 10 minutes. I put a blech underneath it that covers the fire and covers the adjustable part of the fire as well. Now I'm allowed to leave that egg on the fire from before Shabbos. I'm not violating Shia. Okay, I've solved the Shema Yechata part of the three-part statement. That's one way to take care of the problem. Yeah?
Also, is there some sort of like what if you had an item, this might be too theoretical, but you had an item that you don't think is going to be ready for Shabbos Day, you think it's not going to be ready for Shabbos Day, then you come Friday, and okay, it's ready. Should you be mutter to use that?
Good question. That probably would be mutter, based on the Gemara has a case called Kitma v'Nislabsa. So if you covered the fire and then it just, had a Tchias HaMesim and burned right through. So we say you can continue to do Shehiyah on that fire, even though, because you did the necessary action to take care of the problem, and it ended up that the problem wasn't solved. Okay. Good. So that's the basic introduction. Now let's talk about some nafkaminas as to how we're understanding this statement of the Gemara. Okay? What are some nafkaminas how we understand the statement of the Gemara? So if I understand that it has to be, I take it very literally, lo chaz yil urta, it can't be ready until tomorrow. So what would be the issue with putting something up that's raw? Right? What about the egg case? Right? We already mentioned that one. The egg case, would that be a valid application of Kedei Rechaisa? No, not at all. For sure not. That'll be ready in 10 minutes. Right? So if you'd say it's all about not being ready until tomorrow, it would have to actually be a Metzius where it won't be ready until tomorrow. If we say that the focus is the Hesach Hadas, if you say that it's all about the Hesach Hadas, and that maybe... I just assumed when I put it up there raw, it's not going to be ready till tomorrow, or I don't need it till tomorrow. Therefore, it's all about the Esach Hadas. What's the extreme leniency that could come up with on that case? What's the extreme leniency?
Pick anything and just forget it. I'm saying just cover the towel on or don't look at it.
No, so that we have to stick within the Takanas Chachamim. We're not going to invent new ways to do it, but within the Takanas Chachamim, yeah. You're going out for dinner, right? And another way to say that would be, it's on tomorrow's menu. It's on tomorrow's menu, right? You guys, I don't know where you're holding in terms of food preparation, but from definitely when I was your age, and unfortunately probably still today, like, you know, if it's around, I'm going to eat it. But you know, hopefully your wives and my wife, you can't just eat whatever you want just because it's ready. You have to eat the things that are for tonight, and you eat the things that are for tomorrow. And therefore, if it's on the menu, right, my wife puts the menu on the fridge. There's a din d'rabbanan, it's a gzeira that you might come to erase. So you're not, my wife is not allowed to read the menu on Shabbos, because you might start crossing things off the list. So I used to be in charge. Now my kids all know how to read, thank God. So I lost my job of reading the menu. But you're supposed to read the menu Friday night. So on Shabbos day, my wife would, like, before she went to sleep Friday night, she would take out all the dishes, the serving plates that were going to be used depending on what we were eating the next day. So she would say, take the menu, read it to me. And then she takes out all the serving plates. So it was a very strict menu. What's on the menu for Friday night? What's on the menu for Shabbos day? So if something's on the menu for Shabbos day, maybe I am a siach das from it, and therefore, even if it wasn't completely raw per se, even if it was in the category of something that was not allowed to do shihiyah, but since it's on the menu, it's on the fridge, it's official, Shabbos day, you're not eating it tonight, so why would I ever stoke the coals to make it ready for tonight? You hear what I'm saying? So that's the extreme leniency in the other direction. Even if the food is going to be ready in 10 minutes, still, it's not for tonight, it's for tomorrow. And therefore, there's no reason for me to try to make it ready quicker tonight. So that's the extreme. So we have the extreme chumrah on one side, that even though you're fulfilling the Takanas Chachamim, that it's completely raw right now, still, if it's going to be ready for tonight, you can't do it. On the other side, you have the extreme leniency, which is, if it's going to be on tomorrow's menu, even if it will be ready tonight, or even if it's more cooked than completely raw, it's going to be okay. Right, and what's a great raya for that side of the equation? The case of the garma chaya. Somebody else mentioned before, right? He said, well, you just have one bone. Maybe you're just going to eat around it. So he's saying, no, when you put that raw bone in, you're not posseling up the whole dish. The whole chont is not raw. So maybe you're in a situation where most of the chont's going to be ready. A little bit of the chont will not be ready. Maybe it's all about creating a heker that this is for tomorrow. And therefore, it's okay as long as it's on tomorrow's menu. Okay, so now let's try to see what some of the Mefarshim have to say about this. I gave you, source number two, I gave you the wrong line in the Mordechai. I'll read you the correct line in the Mordechai that I was looking for. So the Mordechai says the following. Afilu lo bashul kemaycho ben drusoy. Even if the food is not Michael ben Drusoy cooked, ishad yebei garmachaya shapir dami. If you put a raw bone in there, it's acceptable. V'taymahave, kevon dechayhu, since it's raw, lo yoil shum chitoy laochlo halayla. As much stoking as you do will not help you to be able to eat it tonight. And for tomorrow morning, it's not necessary to stoke it. It'll be ready on its own. It'll be perfectly ready without any assistance. That is the shita of the Mordechai. So how's the Mordechai holding? What does it sound like? First reason of the Gemara, it can't be ready. It has to be that any stoking of the coals will be ineffective. If it's effective to stoke the coals, doesn't matter that it's raw. So the egg case, forget about it. Right? Anything, you want to make rice on, you want to put some rice on the fire. I don't know, how long does rice take? There's something called minute rice. Let's assume we're not talking about minute rice, because then we know how long it takes. But let's say rice takes a half hour, 20 minutes, 10 minutes. Say the rice will definitely be ready by the time you're home from shul. So there, it says, doesn't matter how raw it is, it just matters that it can't be ready at the time. So the Mordechai would definitely prohibit this. And we find this similar lashon in the Tur. I gave you source number 3. I'm going to pick it up from... I'm going to pick it up about 3 lines into the copy that I gave you in the middle of the line. Leikol amecha shemiyachata kevan shen isbashel kol tzarko. So in other words, something which is completely cooked, we're not afraid you're going to stoke the flames. Uvachai nami meisiach daito mimenu ad lamachar. Right, it says with something raw also, we're not afraid you're going to do anything because it's going to be able to cook overnight. It's not exactly what I was looking for. Oh, yeah, let's flip the page over. I think this is what I was looking for. V'imnasan ba chaticha chaya, second line, if he put a raw piece of meat into it, mutar kilo isakula chaya, sharehesiach daita mimena bishvila chaticha chaya, she'ena. Next word. It's not a test, I just think it's a key word. She'ena ye chola liz bashel ad lamachar. It's not able to be ready until tomorrow. And thus, since it's not able to be ready until tomorrow, you will be mesiach das. But it's all totally in the metzias of the food. Doesn't matter if the food is raw. It has to matter that the food cannot be cooked. It cannot be cooked until tomorrow. Yeah.
Does that mean tomorrow mafresh? Or sure, it means that not at any point that a person will be awake. It means they'll be ready like midnight.
Right. So I can't say more than the actual words of the Rishonim. So tomorrow, you know, I guess alos hashachar. Right, or the earliest you're allowed to eat on Shabbos day, because you know you have a chevra, you know they like to go to the tish and they like to come back at 3 in the morning and raid the chulent, so you never know. It's dafka. You have to say that it's not even talking just about the Friday night meal. Could be talking about the post meal meal or the post meal meal meal. Right, so you have to worry about all of that. Yeah.
According to Mordechai, if it's not going to be ready by the time that. Therefore,
the Hesach Hadas gets rid of the Shem Yechata, but you will not have a Hesach Hadas unless it's physically impossible for it to be ready until tomorrow.
And that's the same thing as the
two. Right. I think those two Rishonim will line up nicely and based on that Lashon. Okay. On the extreme, perhaps the extreme other end, not the complete extreme, but maybe... You have the Pirush HaMishnah of the Rambam. So the Pirush HaMishnah of the Rambam here, I'm going to try to skip to the second to last line in source number 4. V'chein im hoya hatavshil bashil v'lo bashil. If the food was partially cooked, meaning but not enough that it was Michael Ben Drusoy, V'nosan bo be'eis hatmana davar chai, and he puts something raw into it, like that's what we called in the Gemara, garma chaya, right? He put something raw into there. Now look at the next words. Basar, o, what's the next word? Yurakos. Right, what are yurakos? For those fans of the Manishtana, right? Vegetables. So vegetables, whoever heard of a vegetable that takes a long time to cook? Right? I don't, you guys familiar with anything? Say, I don't think there are any vegetables that take a very long time to cook. I don't know if you call it, I don't think he, like potatoes do take a long time to cook, but I don't think he would call a potato a vegetable. So yurakos, lashon yerek, right? That's what Rabbi Yehuda would say, gets a bracha boramine deshayim. Right? You know what I'm talking about? So, this guy gets me in the bag. All right. So, so we're talking about greens. Greens, they cook really quickly. Right? The only time it takes vegetables a long time to cook is when we're dafka afraid. We'll cook them so fast, they won't have any flavor. Like they had flavor in the first place. Come on. I eat a lot of vegetables, but let's not pretend. So the only way we cook them slowly. We don't even boil them directly in the water. We steam them so they cook slower, right? So vegetables be ready in 2 seconds. So the Pirush HaMishnah, the Rambam says basar o yirakos. So it seems the Rambam would come out against the Mordechai and the Tur. The Rambam seems to say that it can be ready very quickly in the evening, as long as it was raw at the time. It's mutter to do it because he's mesiach das. That would seem to be the opinion of the Rambam. Now, the truth is, if you look in source number 5, you have the Rambam from the Mishnah Torah. He doesn't say Yerukos. So, it just says in the, if you look in the second line, im hishlich letocho ever chai samach levein hashmashos nasa kol kitab shel chai umuto lashoso ala eish afal pishel agar v'lo kisa v'pnei shu kvar yisiach daitim men aveinu bot lachlos v'gechol. There he just says a piece of meat, ever chai, right? He just put in a raw piece of meat. He doesn't mention vegetables. So if you look in the Kesef Mishnah in source number 6, he's just like, yeah, he didn't change his mind from the Pirush HaMishnah. He just more metzias is Aver Chai, but it means Aver or Yerukos. Sometimes what you don't find in the Mishnah Torah, you find in the Sefer HaMitzvah. Sometimes you don't find in the Sefer HaMitzvah, you find in the Pirush HaMishnah. So he says he doesn't think that you should make anything out of that. Kesef Mishnah thinks that the Rambam would stick with what he wrote in the Pirush HaMishnah. Yeah. So yeah. So here's the two. So those are the two moves we have to use, right? These are the two moves when you don't like a Pirush HaMishnah of the Rambam. So, old school move number one, or it's really old, it's old school move number one is, he was chozer, right? The Rambam changed his mind. So that's the move that the Taz goes for in source number 7. So I gave you two pieces in the Taz. Let's skip to the second one for a second. When the first paragraph ends, the next one is Chaticha Chaya. So the Shulchan Aruch chopped on to that, not exactly to the lashon of the Rama, more like the lashon of the Tur, but still, Birama Pirush HaMishnah Kosef Kigon Basar O Yerek Lamad Beis Yosef Mizeh Afilu Nasan Bo Davar She'efer Efshalish Bashal Mi'od Yom. Right, the Beis Yosef, the same person as the Kesef Mishnah. Well, in this case, it matters. He wrote 3 major works. He wrote other works too, but 3 major works that Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote during his lifetime were Kesef, in order, the Beis Yosef, Shulchan Aruch, and the Kesef Mishnah. Wrote the Kesef Mishnah when he was much older. So it stands to reason that the Mechaber is going to hold like he held in the Kesef Mishnah, which was that meat is lav dafka. Even if you added some raw vegetables, it counts. And he says, even though definitely she'evshel is bashem bo yom shari, Kavan, and so what's the svara there? She'osa maisa mochiach shemisiach daito mimenu. He did an action which made it clear that he is not planning on using this. He did an action which made it clear that it's for tomorrow. Therefore, midkar v'lo asi lechtu. He's going to remember that he doesn't want it for tonight, and he's not going to stoke the coals. Aval bechiburo, but in his actual writing, the one we care about, it sounds like the Taz is saying, not really. He just he's saying that in the Mishnah Torah, Kosev Rambam Eiver Chai Mashma Dafka Basar. Sounds like it only works for meat. V'chein roi la'alocha, says the Taz, that's the way to go. Sounds like the Taz is saying that, yeah, he did write it in the Pirush HaMishnah, but let's take what he said in the Mishnah Torah seriously and just, you know, leave what he said in the Pirush HaMishnah to be the wild musings of a young man. Right? The Rambam was very young when he wrote the Pirush HaMishnah, and he was much older when he wrote the Mishnah Torah. So we assume that the Mishnah Torah is the Mishnah Achrona. Right? That's the final psak of the Rambam. Happens to be, there's a very good professor in Bar Ilan, I believe, who really has excellent lectures on these topics, and Rabbi Dr. Wolf, Jeffrey might be his first name, does that make sense? So he has, I've heard in his lectures years ago, I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was something to the effect of, we now have a lot of proof that the Rambam was constantly upgrading his works throughout his lifetime. And that includes the Pirush HaMishnah. So it's not so convenient to always say that whatever it says in the Pirush HaMishnah, he was chozer. If he were chozer from it, then he would have been chozer from it. Literally. Because it wasn't just, yes, he did publish the Pirush HaMishnah when he was much younger, but he did upgrade it as he aged. And in addition, the other point that people will try to get to is the translation issue. Mishnah Torah was written in Lashon HaKodesh. The Pirush HaMishnah was written in, I guess you can call it Judeo-Arabic or Sephardi Yiddish, or however you want to look at it. So it was, it was Arabic and Hebrew characters with a lot of Hebrew thrown in there. So it was written in a different vernacular, and it had multiple translations. Some of the translations were done in the lifetime of the Rambam that he somewhat approved of and actually corrected some of them himself, and there have been more recent translations. I think the Bar Ilan that I gave you is the Rav Yosef Kappach translation, which is considered a very good one, but as in all fields of academia, you have to make your mark by saying that whatever came before you wasn't good enough. So there have been at least one translation since. So, but at the very least, everyone will admit that Rav Kappach's translation is very good. Could there be better? Certainly could be. But it's a good translation. And the Rambam did say Yerek. Was he Chozer? The Taz wants to say he was. And even if he wasn't, the Taz doesn't like that shot. Yeah. Because that's like an act of demonstration that, like, you don't put raw food on the fire in those days, especially if you don't plan to, if you're planning to eat it very, very soon. Right, but here he's talking also about adding, meaning you could argue, and this is a pretty valid argument, I think, that it has to be a ma'isa mochiach. Now, what is a ma'isa mochiach? If you put up the omelet before Shabbos, so that's not a ma'isa mochiach at all, because it's the nature of that to be ready very quickly, and it's an entire entity. If you put up a raw chulent, that's a ma'isa mochiach, right? Somewhere in the middle is if you have a chulent and then you add some raw vegetables to the chulent, right? That's adding it right before Shabbos. So like that's a weird thing to do, because normally it's ready to go, but you don't add something raw to a dish that's ready to go. As opposed to, you might put something up that's raw, that's going to be ready in a few minutes, so that might not be as much of a ma'isa mochiach. Okay, and then there's the third, so that's the extreme shita on one side, that it cannot be ready. What I'm going to call the middle shita is that if you do a ma'isa mochiach, then that's good enough. And then the extreme shita on the left, not politically, just... Yeah, I was calling the Machmir side the right and the Makel side the left, but it doesn't have to be that way. Just for the record, we're facing different directions, so my right is your left, so ha. Huh. Okay, so so if you look in the Beis Yosef, so he quotes, start from the second line over there. Yesh lefarish del tzorech halayla lav dafka, duhu adin b'masha letzorech machar, so he says the tour used the lashon of he has to leave it on the fire for tomorrow. So the Beis Yosef starts off by saying that's lav dafka, for tomorrow is lav dafka. Then look in the third line from the end. The efshar didafka nokat letzorach halayla. Maybe he really meant it has to be for tonight. De'ilu l'tzorech machar b'chol gavna shari l'shauye al-gabe kirashena grufa k'tumo b'taner afil hiskel is bashel. He says, maybe if it's for tomorrow, it's on tomorrow's menu, then it's going to be mutter no matter what. The flame is uncovered. It's already partially cooked. Doesn't matter. Lo yigil mechav ben drusoy. De'kol l'tzorech machar me'siach daite v'lo asil l'chetuye. Anything that's for tomorrow, you have a hesach hadas, and you're not going to do chitui. K'moshe kosev be kolbo. Who holds that way? The kolbo. Kolbo was from the traditions of the Bali Atosfos, and he holds that as long as it's for tomorrow, it's good to go. And he quotes Agos Mordechai, says this as well. I didn't see it in Agos Mordechai. I think Agos Mordechai quotes it, but doesn't hold that way. And then he says, Ava lo ra'isi b'divrei shum posek zulasam shechilek b'kach. I haven't seen anybody else who holds this way. Now, so the Beis Yosef rejects the kolbo as an acceptable shita, but why is it important for us? Why is it good to know the kolbo? I don't know if you guys discussed this yet, but if you haven't yet, you probably will soon. There's an important rule, another comment of the kolbo. Bir Halacha quotes it elsewhere, but I gave you this Bir Halacha in source number 10, So the Bi'ur Halacha points out litzorach alayla kein hu lashon atur vim kavanaso litzorach machar yesh poskim shematirin de lo chayshin and shiyava lachtos. So he quotes this idea from the kolbo. Some poskim hold as long as it's for tomorrow, it's okay. Ukimo b'chayis. It's the same thing as if it were actually raw. Ryan Simeration and Dalit Bi'ur Agrashom Magen Avram Sham El Yiraba Reisim and Zed the Medina in Lismochal Zed. He quotes some poskim. He says don't rely on this lahalacha. Excuse me. He says, how do we paskin, says the Bir Halacha? It's got to be that it's impossible for it to cook. So he says, when it comes to the possibility, we are afraid. Let's say you did it. You can eat it. You shouldn't do it all the time. Right? As if you see yourself doing this all the time, then you should, you know, at a certain point, the heter runs out. But, he says, let's say you left some food on the fire, and it was on tomorrow's menu, and you didn't realize it, you can eat it. Let it continue to cook throughout the night, and eat it tomorrow. Because we have the sheet of the kolbo to fall back on, and that's okay. Now, there's another reason why you don't even need to come on to this. That's talking about you doing it. What about, let's say you show up at someone else's house and they are violating the laws of Shihia, Chazara, etc. They're just tap dancing all over these dinim. They don't know what they're. So can you eat the food? What? So you assume they're doing it. Well, it's b'shogeg in the sense that they don't know the halachos of Shabbos. But what you'll see when it comes to these laws, they're even more machmir with the derabbanans, that some if you violate some of these things, you're going to ask for the food. So the halacha is that as long as there is a valid opinion that holds that it's mutter to do it, then you can eat it. So if you put these two, that's a din of the kolbo. So if you put these two kolbos together, you're good to go. Meaning even if the person violated Shihia, he violated Shihia. You come into the house, you see a bunch of flames with food on it, you see a bunch of food in the oven. And you ask the person, when did you put that food in the oven? Oh, last before Shabbos. What do you think, I'm a guy? Like, put the food in the oven before Shabbos. And I kept it on low, I pressed Sabbath mode on the oven, and then it's one of the great misnomers. I've been to more than one house that has violated all the laws of, you know, Chazara on Shabbos, because they thought it's a Sabbath mode. So like, Star K holds you're allowed to do this on Shabbos. Star K does not hold you're allowed to do this. It's really Yom Tif mode. Sabbath mode is Yom Tif mode. But for whatever reason, I don't know. So they called it Sabbath mode. It's just very misleading. So so they have the food in the oven. So you say, when was the food in the oven? It was from before Shabbos. So you're there Shabbos day. So good news is, you can eat it. Why? Because you have the right to be somich on the kolbo. We don't paskin on the kolbo. So first of all, maybe we do, b'di'evid. But even if we don't paskin on the kolbo, even b'di'evid, still, a different comment of the kolbo, and this we do paskin holds that even if there is one legitimate opinion that holds that this is a mutter way to do things, then you're allowed to rely on it b'di'evit. And that everybody holds like. So it's important to keep that in mind, that this kolbo is a valid heter out there, that's out there if it was already if it was already done. There is such a shita. Okay. There's a lot more to get to, but maybe just one or two other other side points. Rav Henkin, Rav Yosef Elio Henkin, was a great posek, especially he was the big posek in America before World War II, and then even after. A lot of his svarim are being they put out a few more svarim from him in the recent years. What's it called? Gurus Elio, maybe. I don't know. I have two volumes of Shalos and Tshuvos they put out recently. Excellent, really enjoyable Tshuvos. So in his old Tshuvos that are available on Hebrew Books, he has a point where he doesn't like Keder Chaisa, and he says that the reason I don't like Keder Chaisa is that it's an issue of zmanim. It's an issue of zmanim, meaning it says you got to put the pot on the fire samach l'chashecha. You got to put it on before it gets dark. So we start Shabbos when? When do we start Shabbos? You guys have had Shabbos before, right? So when do you start Shabbos?
In the summer. In the summer.
No. I mean, like, we light candles, let's say 18 minutes before Shkia. Right? Your mom starts Shabbos 18 minutes before Shkia. You don't. Why? How do I know you don't? Because then you go to shul daven mincha. Then you go to shul daven mincha. So it can't be Shabbos, or you wouldn't be allowed to daven mincha. So you go to shul daven mincha after that. So let's say you start Shabbos 2 minutes before Shkia. Right? My Rav, he knows that you're not supposed to daven mincha Erev Shabbos 10 minutes after Shkia. Because most shuls daven 10 minutes after Shkia. But in my shul, we have very chashuv Rav. So he knows that you're supposed to daven daven a little earlier than that. So they daven, that's right, Lewis. So they daven 5 minutes after Shkia. So you can be finished before Shabbos actually starts. And then we start Shabbos at Shkia, right? But Lamaisa, that Shkia, if you learn the Zmanim, so that's a chumrah that we do, that we don't want to do Malacha after Shkia. But that's not necessarily when Shabbos actually starts. So Rav Henkin just points out, yeah, you're going to put the chulant up right before Shkia, but maybe Shabbos really starts a half hour later. According to Rabbeinu Tam, you still got, you got 45 minutes or whatever. In the summer, you have a long time after Shkia till Shabbos really starts. So by the time Shabbos actually starts, it's not going to be Keder Chaisa anymore. And then he goes again and he says, yeah, now also our stovetops are so good and consistent. Things cook really quickly. How many things are really going to be a Keder Chaisa that couldn't possibly get ready until tomorrow? So that's why I would suggest that you don't apply the heter of Keder Chaisa except for the chulant. I did an experiment when I first got married. How long does it take the chulant to cook? How long does it take? So, one more thing. What's cooking? What's the definition of starting to cook? Yeah. So the Chazon Ish has a tremendous chumrah in this regard. The Chazon Ish says, we don't know what it means, cooking, not cooking. It means till it gets to Yad Soledes Bo. So that doesn't take forever. When the cholent is Yad Soledes Bo, it is not cooked at all. It is raw. And he wants to say that that's pshat in the Mishnah Brura. I would suggest that it is not pshat in the Mishnah Brura. If you take a look in source number 12, I gave you a comment on the Mishnah Brura. This is the Mishnah Brura commenting on Keder Chaisa, something that's not cooked at all. So he says, what does it mean, klal? It's not cooked at all. Hainu da'afilu hucha matav shel nami mutter la'ashos. Even if it got warm, you can leave it on the fire. Delo gazrin shem yechate, because we're not afraid. Meaning that's the rest of the cholent is hot. We're not afraid you're going to stoke it. Cave unto etzem abish alone is bashel klal, because it didn't yet cook at all. So the Chazon Ish is reading that as saying, yeah, it got warm, but it didn't yet get to Yad Soledes Bo. That's not what the Mishnah Berurah says. It says it didn't start to cook, right? And lest you think, you're right, like, how dare you say anything against Chazish, which is still true, but I'm right about this one. So he says, look in source number 13 in the Shaar HaTzion. What does the Shaar HaTzion say? Avol im nizbashel ktsas, afilu pachos Michael ben Drusoy oser. If it was cooked a little bit, that even if that little bit is less than Michael ben Drusoy, wouldn't that be a great opportunity to say, afilu higia liyad soledes bo? Nishbashel ktsas, as opposed to what? As opposed to half cooked? There is a world of difference between half cooked and Michael ben Drusoy. There's no difference between half cooked and Michael ben Drusoy. This is what I get for taking on the Chazanish. So there's no difference. That they are one and the same. There's a world of difference between Yad Soledes Bo and Michael ben Drusoy. So if you're saying that it really started to cook already, but it didn't yet reach Michael ben Drusoy, that doesn't mean Yad Soledes Bo. It means like the gears are churning. Yad Soledes Bo, nothing's boiling. Right? How hot did you guys learn Yad Soledes Bo is? Right, everything's machlokas, but lemaisa, 150 degrees, let's say. How hot is 150 degrees? Not hot. If your coffee was 150 degrees, you'd want a new cup of coffee, no? I mean, not 150. 115, right? I said 150. Sorry about that. Right? So again, this is what I get. But but I'm saying 115 degrees is not hot. There are people who shower in hotter water than Yad Soledes Bo. So it's. No, it's true. It says it. What does the Gemara say Yad Soledes Bo is? Tino, right? A kreis or sheltino michves bo. Meaning, why? Because, you know, so nowadays I would suggest like you do like what you do with the bottle test, right? You put it on your wrist because you don't want to, you know, if you put your finger in there, people's hands are different. The wrist is pretty tender. So like that's like the Yad Soledes Bo test. Not really, but I'm saying that's a good way to gauge it. But you would shower in hotter water than that would fail the wrist test. So Yad Soledes Bo is not so hot. So if the Chazon Ish is saying it's not Kedei Rechaisa because it got up to Yad Soledes Bo, so then you really threw most of the heter. If you put together the Chazon Ish and Rav Henkin, you threw out the whole heter of Kedei Rechaisa, because even the chulent will get up to Yad Soledes Bo before Rabbeinu Tam's start of Shabbos. Now, the pashtus is you don't have to be choshish for Rav Henkin, and there are achronim who are not choshish for him. I think the chutshani's not choshish for it. I wrote it down, but Rav Vosner and Rav Nissen Karelitz are both makel on this, because it's not totally, but I think Rav Shlomo Zalman was machmir, so it's not totally on when you accept Shabbos, it's totally on when Shabbos starts. And if you think about it, I'm out of time, but if you think about it, it's a nice... There's one mahalach versus the other mahalach, meaning it's all about the objective. Can it cook? Right? If you're going with the can it cook, maybe you're also going with the objective Shabbos starts. Whereas if you're saying it's all totally in your das, your hesach das, maybe it's also totally in when you accept Shabbos. Love dafka, but it fits nicely in terms of mahalachim. But okay. But just to close, that's why I would not recommend relying on Kedei Rechaisa with anything except for cholent. And I think there is definitely room to be lenient that once you are Makabel Shabbos, you can put up the raw chulent five minutes before. It's not going to get to Yad Soledes Bo. And even if it does get to Yad Soledes Bo, the Parshav Shad in the Mishnah Berurah is that's not a problem. You could come back an hour and a half later and that chulent looks completely raw, and you're definitely not going to see any action until tomorrow. Anyway, have a great Shabbos, guys.